When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, presented by Evergreen Podcasts. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy, Flynn McClain. Tonight, this is the first standalone review episode we'll be doing for every release in the Springsteen Archive series moving forward, now that Backstreets is unfortunately no longer in business. And Flynn, tonight we get to start with an interesting selection.
Yes, October 14th, 2009, from the Spectrum in Philadelphia. I know people aren't high on the 2009 tour, but this was definitely a good pick. It includes a full performance of the Darkness on the Edge of Town album, and it means we complete the set. We have now we have all six albums that were performed in their entirety from that stretch of the tour, and it's definitely worthy. I'm really enjoying this one.
Yeah, this is a good choice. I remember when we did the last show on the Archive series, we talked about this show being released from the fall of 2009. Obviously, Darkness also exists from the Darkness box, recorded live at the Paramount without an audience. And this fills in, as you said, the last album from that 2009 segment of the tour. I think that the show really is a good listen, surprisingly so in a way. Perhaps we forget how great they were in the fall of 2009. Now, I know if we look at the spring of 2009, the set lists were weird. He was dropping a lot of the stuff from Working on a Dream because it wasn't working very well. But the fall of 2009, these shows were super hot. The River Show was as good a show as I've seen in probably the last 25 years, except maybe St. Louis. And we know the Greetings Show was great. And all these shows, the band was really on, and I think that that is represented here as well.
Well, I think the key about the fall, these fall album shows, is that the albums gave it a kind of a emotional arc that he had not found previously on the tour when he was trying to create set lists basically off the top of his head or trying to integrate the new material in, and that just... none of that was working. And so when he put in the albums, it just felt so much better. It felt more of a complete show. At a lot of these album shows, though, the rest of the show was kind of lacking. There were a lot of greatest hits kind of thing, or that whole, stump the band with the signs and then get bizarre covers. But at this one, you had an opening of Thundercrack, as well as the only tour performance of What Love Can Do. And then after the album, you got Sherry Darling, Human Touch, and Long Walk Home right in a row. And that, to me, that's a pretty strong post-album sequence.
The performance of What Love Can Do, I thought, worked really well. This was not a show that I saw, but it does sort of show how weird things were for a part of that tour, because What Love Can Do, which is a compact rocker, sounds great, was played this one time. And something like Outlaw Pete, I'm not knocking anyone who enjoys it, and I enjoyed it the first one or two times I saw it, but it was played pretty much every night of the tour up to this show. And then, of course, the title track, Working on a Dream, which I think is one of the worst songs in the catalog, was played every night except for the Fall River performance, and he didn't play Kingdom of Days a lot of these nights. The Wrestler was dropped. I know that was sort of a bonus track. And then you got What Love Can Do. So it's great to hear it represented. And that is one of the reasons why this is a good pick.
Well, the thing about What Love Can Do, it was always a mystery because it was possibly the only E Street type rocker on the Working on a Dream album. And it wasn't played until 6 months into the tour. And it just didn't make any sense to me that why we wouldn't play it. And then it's even weirder because we hear this recording, we hear this performance, they pretty much nailed it.
Totally
nailed it. More mystery as to why wasn't this done. I mean, something like My Lucky Day, it's kind of a fun rocker. I guess he was trying to replace Two Hearts with it. But it seems very fluffy compared to what Love Can Do, which is, to me, just a fantastic song.
He just seemed to lack conviction in some of this material, and I think that's what led him to switch to the full album performances in the fall. To be fair, it worked really well, and this is a perfect example because I did not see any of the Darkness shows that fall. I think there were two, right?
There were only two, yes.
And I had heard that the Giant Stadium show had not gone over well at all. And that was one of the reasons why they did the Darkness at the Paramount. But the truth is, the performance of Darkness here is scorching.
Yeah, there's nothing to nothing negative here to be said about that album performance. You're right, at Giant Stadium, I did attend that show. And yeah, surprisingly enough, the Jersey audience really wasn't that into it. Especially when you got to some of the, you got to like Factory or even Streets of Fire. There weren't, you know, not everybody was paying full attention at all times. Let's just put it that way. And he brought it inside in Philadelphia, and you know you're going to have the hardcores there, and they pretty much nailed it start to finish. I mean, the guitars on basically every song just sound great. I love hearing Charlie's organ in there, especially on Badlands. He just sounds amazing, and as well as Racing in the Street. And really, there's nothing in Bruce's vocals, pretty much on. He really hit the growling notes on Darkness on the Edge of Town. It was just a tremendous performance.
He sounds really good in the show. You're 100% correct. And the entire show from start to finish is top notch. It fits in perfectly with the other performances they've released from the fall of 2009, which is a phenomenal series of shows. And I think that the Streets of Fire, which is the sample cut they released to YouTube, it tears the place up. I mean, I was listening to the speakers, and this is not a show I had really listened to much over the years, and I was really impressed. This was a good selection for them to release, especially coming off of 10 months without a release. Now, a lot of people want to hear Classic Era. We know they're running out of some of those, and we'll see how much more comes. I think they'll have to parcel them out. But for Reunion Era show, this was a unpredictable and I think a really excellent choice.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by unpredictable. I think since you mentioned earlier that we both called for this one, suggested for this one to be released.
I'm talking about for the fan base at large. Okay. I know we called for it, but do you think that this is a show that people were talking about?
Well, see, that's a good question when it comes to Nugs releases. Who is the audience for this? Is it us and our listeners, or is it BTX, or is it people who go see him the once a tour at Giant Stadium? That's kind of the question here.
I don't know. I think it's a bit of a mix. Another example from the same part of the tour, we had talked about the Cleveland show, and of course that was released, the incredible version of Back in Your Arms. But that's another one. I don't think the fan base at large was like, give us the Cleveland 2009 show. Once it gets released, I think people respect it because they hear what a quality performance it was. But those are the types of shows I think that maybe get a little overlooked at the time. And that's why these releases are serving such a great purpose.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Well, I think the fact that a lot of these shows we haven't heard them in excellent quality. We haven't heard them professionally mixed. And then you get a show like this, and another example to me is the Chicago 99 show, in which they release it. It sounds perfectly, absolutely amazing. And all of a sudden, people are saying, whoa, this was a great show. But so you have a lot of recording bias in that. And I'm kind of surprised this one hasn't been more of one that the fans would want to hear. I mean, as far as 2009 shows go, because it was one of the only two performances of the Darkness album, and it sounds great. You have an opening thundercrack, as well as a very cool like encore with Ramrod into Detroit medley. This was always on my radar. How about that?
And we can't forget the Rocky fanfare before Rosalita, which is fun.
Yes, that is fun. And that was also on the final night of the Stand. It was also released October 20th. That included a full album performance of Born in the USA. And it was a good show otherwise with the opening Price You Pay and obviously the Higher and Higher for the first time since, 77. So they got two good ones out of that Stand. And something else I was thinking of, Hal, and related to our episode we did earlier this year, is this the last Stand that he did of more than three nights, like ever?
I believe that it is. You're asking me a question that I wasn't prepared for. but I'm thinking off the top of my head quickly. I'm running through it.
I think it is because
he has not played more than three nights in Jersey
since 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the last real long Stand of his career. So that's and they've released half of the show. So, and I wouldn't mind seeing the other half. Another Born to Run show would be pretty cool.
And you can never really get tired of the Born to Run shows. And they were playing, as I mentioned, so well at this point. Now, let's talk about the sound quality here, because the mix by Al Chiller is really stellar. The separation seems to be better than even some of the other releases we've heard recently. Did you get that as well?
I did. I feel like I can hear every little instrument. And I think a perfect example is at the end of Sunny Day. I don't know what was going on stage. I wasn't at this show.
I was going to bring this up.
But there was something going on where it took him a while to get going for the next song or get ready. And you can hear Steve play a CCR riff that I believe is from Run Through the Jungle.
So I'm not crazy. I thought it was Born on the Bayou.
I may be confusing those two. It's very likely, but
I had that in my notes. I was like, did I hear Born on the Bayou there?
Yes, you did. And it was weird because I was listening on computer speakers, not exactly the most high quality. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, out of the right side, I hear Steve playing CCR. I'm like, now that's really weird. And I'm sure that's something that nobody picked up, whoever listened to the audience recording. That was something that I never saw mentioned anyway.
Well, another thing, Steve, think to point out, did you listen to Rosalita when Bruce does the Papa Says He Knows I Don't Have Any Money line? They've got
yes,
Steve,
I did.
Like as clear as a bell in the backing vocals saying all kinds of hilarious shit. It's great.
That was weird. Yeah, that was very weird. And I was wondering, again, I wasn't at the show, were they sharing a mic at that time? Or was,
I don't know.
Or did Al Chiller just, push up Steve's mic all so far up that we can hear every little word he says?
Whatever, it was very interesting and funny to hear. The guitar throughout, Bruce's guitar, especially on, you first get it on What Love Can Do, there's arpeggio notes in there, and the clarity of each note is just spectacular. I was listening on my headphones as well, and I really was like, and I love when you can hear Bruce's guitar like that. It really is something. This is a very high quality release. And it sort of, like I was saying, sneaks up on you because you wouldn't have thought from 2009 that a random show would necessarily hit this level. But it, in all respects, I think it does. And it's a good addition to the series.
Oh, definitely. I know, as I said earlier, a lot of people aren't into 2009 shows, but I think this one rises to a level of worthiness, a definite worthiness of being in the series, and I'm really enjoying listening to it.
All right, so in the old words of Siskel and Ebert, we give it two thumbs up.
Exactly, exactly.
So we're going to do this every release now, as I was saying at the beginning of the episode. One other thing that we're also doing is on our Patreon, patreon.com/MBTBpodcast, we're doing a separate series, which will just be there, that is called the NBTB Archive Lookback, where we're going to look at all the archives that were released by Bruce prior to us beginning our show in September 2019. So there's 46 of those. We're going to start doing those once a month so that we have a library pretty much of every archive release covered.
Yeah, so we're going to start with the Apollo, which was the first one released in November of 14. And so that will be released to Patreon within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. So again, that's patreon.com/MBTBpodcast. And with that, we're going to wrap things up. None But the Brave is a presentation of Evergreen Podcast, produced by Bull Market Entertainment. I just gave you our Patreon page. You can also find us on Twitter at MBTBpodcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further and up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.